Well, we know the results. The American people know it as well. The media accepts Joe Biden as president-elect, and many world leaders do also. However, Trump, the loser, thus far refuses to accept reality. Trump began his presidency in 2016 with the lie that his opponent Hillary Clinton had received millions of fraudulent votes in a losing effort. Now, he ends his presidency in 2020 with a lie that Joe Biden wants to steal the election with the help of millions of alleged fraudulent votes. And without any evidence, Trump is now on the verge of starting a legal battle that experts are saying he has absolutely no chance of winning. Well, Trump is not as dumb as he seems. He knows that the best way to hinder Biden's tenure is to question the legitimacy of his presidency and to foment chaos and doubt in this country. Remember that despite losing this election, Trump received more than 70 million votes in his favor. Biden has defeated Trump, but not Trumpism. Trump supporters are dancing to the same tunes as Hamlin's rats who hypnotized by the sound of the musician's flute came out of their hiding places to dance behind the Pied Piper. His 70 million fans follow him, despite a pandemic that is wreaking havoc in this country and is killing so many of us. Last Friday, the U.S. reported 137,200 COVID cases and more than 1,000 deaths. This is just in one day. More than 9,830,800 people have been infected by the coronavirus in the U.S., and more than 236,500 have died. No other country comes close to that number. Trumpists appear willing to follow the American Pied Piper to their deaths, like the rats that Hamlin led to the River Weser to drown. Even the White House has become a local transmission center for the virus. The president, the first lady, the chief of staff, advisors at the highest levels, and guests at political and social events at the seat of government of the U.S. have all been infected there. The Trump regime has downplayed the importance of using face masks or of social distancing as measures necessary to combat the pandemic. On the contrary, Trump himself spurns and ridicules the use of face masks and has declared himself in favor of spurious treatments such as hydroxychloroquine, and he's even promoted the injection of chlorine to cure us of the plague. Alarmed by so many coronavirus cases there, Washington Mayor Muriel Bowser has now set up a tent in front of the White House and offers free coronavirus testing to people who have visited the presidential house. At the rate they're going, we will sooner be able to say that there are more cases of coronavirus within the White House than in all of Cuba. Well, Biden won primarily for two reasons. One is Trump's demonstrated ignorance in the face of the pandemic and his reckless disdain for science in his zeal to con the Americans into thinking it was all a Democrat hoax, as he called it. Fortunately, most Americans didn't drink the bleach and didn't dance to the beat of the Pied Piper because they are concerned about their health and the health and lives of their parents or grandparents or children. They don't want to give Trump another 4 years in office. And the other reason is Trump's toxic personality, who daily insulted his enemies, friends, and acquaintances. A president who boasted of knowing more than the scientists, the generals, and the experts. More than 75 million people in this country preferred a more balanced and pragmatic president, especially during this plague. The majority of Americans voted for a president whom they perceived to have the virtue of empathy rather than the vice of hatred. Blacks in this country voted overwhelmingly for Biden. White women too. Poorly educated white men preferred Trump. And Many Cubans pitifully supported Trump. Well, experts wonder why so many Cubans in Miami decided to support a president who wants to economically suffocate their relatives on the island. This is, you know, a really complex question, and there are many explanations and little space to develop them here. But I want to highlight a couple. One is that the hatred spewed by Trump in his tweets and speeches about Cuba found its ideal echo chamber in Miami, a city where hatred is apparently inherited. The city where anti-Cuban terrorists like Posada Carriles, Orlando Bosch, and many others were received and protected as heroes. Another reason is the desire to assimilate that all immigrants have, Mexicans, Chinese, Africans, etc. The difference is that the Cubans of Miami want to assimilate to the United States of Miami, a very reduced version of the United States. For example, there are more American flags flying in front of homes in Hialeah than in Washington. Here in Washington, you see flags of the Black Lives Matter movement, the gay movement, or the flag of Washington, D.C. Yeah, we see the occasional American flag in front of a home, but not nearly as many as in Hialeah. That's not to say that Washingtonians are less patriotic than Miamians, only that patriotism is much more nuanced among Washington residents than amongst Hialeah residents. Well, hopefully decency and respect. The Trump regime's policy towards Cuba has been characterized by bullying, by lies, McCarthyism, and attempts to intimidate Cuba. It's very similar to the rhetoric used by Miami's typical political leaders of Cuban descent. Consequently, we've seen a tightening of the U.S. blockade and a dramatic reduction of remittances to the island. I'm optimistic that the Biden administration will return to the Obama's position of 2016, but I fear it may do so only gradually. I don't think Biden is as bold as Obama. He's more cautious. And it's politically easier to impose sanctions than to remove them. The team that he chose to advise him on foreign relations to Latin America is not a creative or audacious group. Mark Feirstein, Dan Restrepo, Juan Sebastian Gonzalez, and Dan Erickson. It's a quartet that stands out more for not wanting to create waves in Washington than for rectifying its worn-out neoliberal approach to Latin America. But at least none of them is like Michael Kozak, who's now the Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemispheric Affairs and one of the historic architects of the policy of hatred and vengeance against Cuba. Bye-bye Trump is also bye-bye to his cast of characters, and that includes Michael Kozak and Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State. To begin to dismantle what Trump zealously dismantled of the Obama policy in Cuba, Biden can choose between many different starting points. For example, allowing the return of diplomats to the respective embassies, lifting the veto on remittances, making travel categories more flexible for Americans who would like to go to Cuba, removing Cuba again from the list of countries that don't collaborate in the fight against terrorism, eliminating the ridiculous prohibition that Americans and Cuban Americans cannot stay in hotels and dine in restaurants that are part of Gaesa, canceling the imposition of Title III of Helms-Burton, something that, you know, Biden can do easily with a stroke of a pen. Also canceling the disgusting policy that tries to make Cuban doctors desert their humanitarian missions and stop pressuring other countries from using Cuban doctors. Rather than hindering Cuban doctors, Biden could enlist them to help the coronavirus pandemic, help fight the coronavirus pandemic in the U.S., a plague that has killed so many Americans. And perhaps the U.S. can also collaborate with Cuba and other countries to develop a vaccine to combat the virus. But let's not get our hopes too high with Biden. He also wants regime change on the island. But the way to achieve it through trade and collaboration is very different from that of Trump and legislatures such as Marco Rubio and Mario Díaz-Balart. Biden will use Obamian soft power. Cuba knows this and knows how to defend herself from both kinds of power. They learned it from José Martí, who said, trincheras de ideas valen más que trincheras de piedra. Trenches of ideas are worth more than trenches of stone. You know, some on the left mistakenly think that there's not much of a difference between Trump and Biden. But that's like saying there isn't much of a difference between fascism and neoliberalism. If they could speak to us, the victims of Pinochet's fascism would tell us the many differences between an authoritarian fascist leader who murdered, tortured, and disappeared tens of thousands of Chileans and a Christian democratic president who, although he has not responded to the needs of the Chilean people and whose soldiers shoot rubber bullets and jets of water at demonstrators, he has not repressed the Chileans in the same brutal way that Pinochet did. What about the 6 million Jews and the many thousands of gypsies, socialists, and communists that Hitler murdered in Europe, something that no president of the former Weimar Republic did? The battle between Biden and Trump was a battle against neo-fascism. And although the neo-fascists lost the battle, they have not lost the war. Remember, there are 70 million Trump voters out there, many of them armed with AK-47s in this country. And there are 393 million guns in the hands of American civilians. That's scary. Che reminded us that imperialism is not to be trusted, not even a tiny bit, he said. Well, likewise, fascism cannot be allowed to advance, not even a tiny bit. As Dolores Ibárruri, La Pasionaria, said in that famous 1936 speech in Madrid, the fascists will not pass. No pasarán. Equating Biden and Trump because they're both leaders of the United States is a dangerous oversimplification and enormous mistake. The next 4 years are monumental. It's up to the progressive groups that launched Biden to victory to organize and pressure so that Washington addresses the problems of the poor and the middle class in this country. The pandemic kills more low-income people than rich people. Systematic racism hits both blacks, poor blacks, harder than rich blacks. Immigrants are the most vulnerable, and they need the solidarity of others to ensure that government doesn't abandon or persecute them. Economic gender inequality has to end. Climate change urgently needs attention. And the lobby of the oil and coal companies that are so powerful in this country must be contained, not to mention big tech, which has been spreading disinformation and hatred at levels never seen before. If Biden doesn't serve the needs of the majority of the American people in the next 4 years, neo-fascism will return in 2024.